This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:06, and before we get to our first story this hour, just looking at some of the messages that came through about whether or not we would prefer to see curfews being instated to keep kids off the streets and out of trouble, or recreational centres, which is currently being looked at, and what those recreation centres need to have or encompass. Towards the end of the last hour, we were starting to get some really interesting ideas. Yeah. You can call us 7732900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. So there was some talk of Dungeons & Dragons, and and that resulted in, I think, quite a slew of messages going, yay, Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. So that's one idea that's, I think, going to stick around. And then we've also got this that's come through from Richard.
We want kids to be off the streets. Kids love computer games, and we are promoting esports in Malaysia. So why not free or happy hour rates in cyber cafes for school-aged kids at certain times of the evening? Win-win?
I think kids would certainly consider that a win. I'm not sure whether parents and school teachers would, but it's true that we are looking increasingly into the arena of esports, and money is being put there. So whether it's cyber cafes participating in it, or whether the recreation centres will also have areas for this. Sorry, I paused because it occurred to me that if they did, they would be so highly sought after.
Yeah, kids would actually and very willingly want to be in these centres.
I think there would be fights. Sivan says, recreation far outweighs night curfews. We require more football fields, green lungs. The other thing is teenagers are not an easy lot. Open runaround areas are a must, and school hours from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. would be ideal.
We have a message here from Farah who says that curfew is hard to control. I believe it's fine for kids to breach curfew as long as the kids are with people who are of good influence on them and they could spend their time doing useful stuff. When I was in school, I was a scout and we had a lot of activities based in school, the outdoors, and I even joined a free scouting class every weekend at Dataran Merdeka. There's all sorts of activities from cooking to sports, IT, woodworks, camping, field trips, with other scout activities of all races from other schools around KL. There's also a reward system for the kids, loads of scout badges and the King Scout system. Kids get knowledge, spend time with good company, and they can volunteer to teach their peers. Most of the Rover Scouts or Scout Supervisors are volunteer-based and they need to be a good role model for the kids too. Like you said too, Tepi Longkang also can lepak. Why not lepak Tepi Longkang doing something useful for a change?
Agreed, Farah, wholeheartedly. Keep those messages coming. 7732900 is the number to call. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Moving on, though, to our next story. We're talking about the trial for the murder of Kim Jong-nam. I don't think anybody's forgotten the circumstances, really. And on Monday, prosecutors sprung a surprise by asking the court to drop the charges against Siti Aisyah, who was one of the two women accused in the case. Then she was freed and she flew back to Jakarta that very day.
So no reason was initially given by the prosecution team as to why they asked for this, but Indonesian authorities told Reuters that her release was because of Jakarta's campaigning efforts. So it seemed as if diplomatic pressure worked in this case. Attorney General Tommy Thomas cited the good relations between Indonesia and Malaysia as one of the reasons for approving her acquittal.
On the other hand, Duan Thi Huong, who is Vietnamese, will go to trial on April 1st. Vietnam has made a similar request for the charges to be dropped, but the courts rejected it. Huong was seen sobbing after the ruling as she was handcuffed and whisked away by police. And her lawyer, Hisham Tay, is disappointed and said the court's decision was perverse and discriminatory. And he also said that the AG had a moral obligation to come to court to explain why they're going to continue to pursue the case against Huong, but not Siti.
So Huong told reporters that she's not angry at Siti, adding that she's traumatized. She said, God knows that Siti and I did nothing wrong. Please call my father, call my family, and ask for them to pray for me.
So we don't know why this has happened. I mean, I've heard enough speculation, but we didn't necessarily want to participate in that. But it's interesting that Indonesia has said, well, look, you know, it's because we campaigned for it. And also, you know, there's been diplomatic relationships at play. And so it just had us wondering, basically, How does this work, right? How does it work when you have a foreign national arrested within Malaysia? What interplay exists between the governments, our courts, you know, our government? How does it all pan out?
So this is one case, and I think the other cases where maybe this might come into springs to mind also is when, I guess, people who are accidentally become drug mules, right? Whether they're from Indonesia or sometimes even from Australia or Singapore. So, you know, what do the courts necessarily provide for them? What legal representation do they get? Where do they stand in the legal system?
Exactly. So we're speaking with Lim Wei Jet from Hakam to kind of get our heads around this. Wei Jet, thanks for joining us. Can you tell us what rights you're granted when you are a foreign national arrested in Malaysia? What role would your government then play in ensuring that your rights are met?
Well, generally, if a person is arrested overseas, most of the basic protections to a person's arrested will apply. This includes the right to be informed of the grounds of his or her arrest, the right to consult a lawyer, the right to be produced before a judge if the police wishes to detain you longer than the remand period. In Malaysia specifically, if you are a foreigner arrested here, then the right to liberty under Article 5 of the Federal Constitution kicks in. Similarly, a foreigner in Malaysia has the right to be informed of the grounds of his or her arrest, the right to be represented by a lawyer of his or her choice, the right to be produced before a magistrate within 14 days of his or her arrest, if the police wishes to remand that person any further. Article 5 of the Federal Constitution does not discriminate between citizens and non-citizens in that respect, except for certain limited issues. As for the role of the government, a foreign government can ensure at the very least that there is legal representation to the person arrested. The embassy can provide services of an interpreter in court if that particular foreign accused person does not communicate in English or the language of the court which he is arrested in. Diplomatically, a foreign government can try to lobby for its nationals to be released. If there are grounds to do so, they can expedite the process. The same way that the Malaysian Foreign Ministry did for the 47 Malaysians detained in Cambodia, and also recently the 16 Malaysians who were detained in Palembang, Indonesia. So Malaysia did an admirable job in lobbying those governments to allow their workers, the Malaysian workers there, to be returned safely back home to Malaysia.
So we also hear of countries campaigning for the release or the repatriation of people who've been arrested abroad. What does this involve?
This will involve extensive diplomatic communication between the foreign ministries of the respective countries. We have to assume that these countries will consult their immigration authorities, investigation authorities, and also the prosecutors involved. Now, the decision on whether to continue with the prosecution or arrest depends on several factors beyond the immediate facts of the criminal case. Sometimes countries have to ask themselves whether it is worth prosecuting foreigners for the offence committed, or are there larger geopolitical factors at play that needs to be considered at the end of the day. If it is a minor offence, normally the countries will be less strict and will release the foreigners involved. But I believe that when it comes to terrorism or drug-related offences, those countries may not be so lenient to release foreigners because they will want to possibly set a precedent that this kind of transgression of offences will not be tolerated.
We're speaking with Lim Wei Jet from Hakam, essentially about the rights that foreign nationals have when they are arrested and detained here in Malaysia. This is, of course, because of what has occurred with Siti Aisyah earlier this week regarding the Kim Jong-nam trial. Up next, we're going to talk about what happens if you are in the country illegally. Does that change anything? So we'll get those answers. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey, BFM 89.9.
We are talking, that was rude. You are listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Hello, everybody. And we've been talking basically about the rights that you have if you're a foreign national arrested here in Malaysia. And this is, of course, because we saw the release of Siti Aisyah, an Indonesian national who was accused of being involved in the case with Kim Jong-nam. However, the Vietnamese is counterpart the right word? The other accused person, yes, within that case, a Vietnamese lady by the name of Duan Thi Huong, is still going to be tried. So we wanted to kind of understand the diplomatic pressures and circumstances that inform these sorts of decisions. We're speaking with Lim Wei Jet from Hakam, who is on the line. So Wei Jet, earlier you kind of laid out for us what rights are available, but if someone is in the country illegally and accused of a crime, does this then change matters?
It really depends. The 16 Malaysian individuals detained in Palembang, they were alleged of violating their tourist visas. So in a sense, they were alleged to be entering Indonesia illegally, but our foreign ministry managed to secure their release. So it really depends on whether the countries involved want to set a precedent that it will not tolerate the illegal entrance of foreigners into its borders and deems it a national security threat. If they do so, then they will prosecute and will not entertain any requests for the foreigners to be released. But if they don't, and if they see a advantage in releasing these individuals for geopolitical reasons, then they most probably will.
And for cases where this might not be as clear-cut, you know, in this case, the victim was from North Korea, the accused from Indonesia and Vietnam, and the murder having taken place here in Malaysia, how does this work then?
Well, to answer your question, I think an observation of the recent developments of the King Jomnam murder case are quite interesting. So recently, the Attorney General has decided to seek for a discharge not amounting to an acquittal against one of the accused, Siti Aisyah of Indonesia. We know that when Siti Aisyah was arrested pursuant to the murder of King Jong Nam in 2017, President Joko Widodo has been lobbying Malaysia to release her. Now, news reports recently show that the Indonesian Law and Human Rights Minister, Yasona Lauli, had indeed requested the Malaysian prosecutors to withdraw the charges against Siti Aisyah to, quote-unquote, allow her to return to Indonesia, taking into account the good relations between our countries, unquote. Now, it was also reported that the Indonesian Law and Human Rights Minister's letter also stated several reasons to release Siti Aisyah, which included the fact that the Indonesian woman was a victim of deception and had nothing to gain from committing the act. It was also stated that Ms. Aisyah was led to believe that her actions were for a reality show. Hence, she had no real understanding of the real reason she had to perform as she was asked to and has no intention of killing King Jong Nam. The letter also stated that Ms. Siti Aisyah had no awareness whatsoever that she was being used as an intelligent tool of North Korea. Now, we don't know for sure whether the Attorney General had indeed accepted those reasons stated by the Indonesian Law and Human Rights Minister to seek a discharge not amounting to an acquittal. The Attorney General may very well have other evidential reasons to seek that particular order against Siti Aisyah. But what this at least highlights is the fact that foreign countries do have leverage over countries where their citizens are being arrested and charged. If there are strong ties between both countries, there's a stronger likelihood that a favorable outcome will arise. Now, I must say that in the criminal justice system, the Attorney General's decision to prosecute or otherwise is not confined to the immediate evidence surrounding the criminal offense, but he or she can take into account broader considerations such as foreign relations and national interests. And in any event, legally speaking, a discharge not amounting to an acquittal against Siti Aisyah does not mean that she has not committed the offence. It just means that there is not enough evidence to proceed with the trial. And importantly, if any evidence is gathered later on, the accused may be tried again.
Right. And in situations like this, does the government of the alleged perpetrators have any say in who is going to represent them in court? Can the governments arrange for legal counsel?
At the end of the day, it's the right of the accused to appoint any counsel that he or she wishes to represent him or her in court. If his own country offers legal counsel, he can very well take it up. And more often than not, he or she does. The foreign country involved can, of course, arrange for legal representation. And in my experience in Malaysia, it has happened before.
So what issues or potential areas of conflict can arise when dealing with a case that involves foreign governments?
When we talk about international relations through realist lenses, arrests and charges may not depend entirely on the immediate facts of the case, but there are geopolitical forces and tensions at play which affects the criminal justice system. We can see very clearly in an example recently where Canada arrested Meng Wanzhou, the chief financial officer of Huawei, on December 1st, 2018, on a U.S. extradition warrant. In retaliation, China detained two Canadian citizens, businessman Michael Spavor and former diplomat Michael Kovrig, which China alleges they are endangering their national security. So we see here that the arrests and possible charges of these individuals in Canada and China, respectively, are not entirely driven on purely the criminal evidence at play, but there are larger forces behind the scenes which drive these actions, which are pushed to the spotlight recently. So it doesn't apply to smaller and less significant countries like Malaysia, but what I can say is that we can only pray that you are not at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Wei-Jiat, thanks for speaking with us. That was Lim Wei-Jiat from Hakam, weighing in on the rights that foreign nationals have when they are arrested or detained here and accused of a crime. Just something that we wanted to untangle, especially with the recent developments in the Kim Jong-nam case. If you've got any thoughts, you can send them through WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
We have a message here about our previous story related to curfews and, of course, recreational centres to help deal with potential problems that kids go through, you know, if they're involved in crime. So we have one message here from Asan who says that other than schools, we should be fully utilising religious spaces, mosques, churches and so on to attract the youth. Other than religious activities, it can be used for educational programs or activities. People are paid to take care of these places. Might as well use them. They are safe, lots of lighting and adult presence too.
Agreed. And also, comes back to that point about using existing spaces.
Yep.
We don't necessarily need to pump a lot of money into building entire buildings. It's about looking around and seeing what's already available, I think.
And there's a lot to take away from this too, because, you know, religious centres themselves run so many activities targeting youth, right? Like, I think for churches, they have Christian fellowships and they sing in choirs. And I guess that goes in some different ways, different activities for mosques and temples as well.
If you've got any messages about that, again, 018-789-8899 is that number to WhatsApp and tweet us at BFM Radio. In the meantime, we've got some music coming your way. Here's Richard Hawley with The Nights Are Cold, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.